I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
NLRB judges have ruled that Starbucks violated federal labor law over 100 times during the past 18 months, far more than any other corporation in America.
Sir, Starbucks Coffee Company unequivocally, let me set the tone for this very early on, has not broken the law.
Senator Bernie Sanders grills Starbucks' longtime CEO Howard Schultz in a testy Senate hearing on the company's union busting. We'll air excerpts and speak to a Starbucks worker fired for his union organizing. Then filmmaker Jennifer Fox. 5 years ago, she made a remarkable narrative film, The Tale, based on her experience surviving child sexual abuse by a coach.
When I was a child, I was obsessed with changing myself. Now I don't even remember who I used to be.
Jennifer, sweetheart, I found a story that you wrote in the English class.
Where'd you find it?
What matters is what it says.
I've met two very special people.
Bella is an excellent coach.
Don't you trust me?
Jennifer Fox recently revealed the name of the man who abused her, Ted Nash, a legendary Olympic rower and coach. Today, Jennifer Fox comes back on Democracy Now! For her first radio television interview since making this revelation, which has sparked an investigation by the U.S. Rowing Federation. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations has adopted a landmark resolution that seeks to hold countries accountable for failing to respond to the climate crisis while protecting more vulnerable nations. On Wednesday, the UN General Assembly voted on a measure calling on the International Court of Justice to establish obligations under international law for nations to protect their populations from the impacts of global heating. The resolution was introduced by the low-lying Pacific Island nation of Vanuatu, which the UN has described as the nation most vulnerable to natural disasters. Its adoption comes a month after Vanuatu was hit by two powerful tropical cyclones. This is Cynthia Huniahi of the Solomon Islands, one of 27 students from eight Pacific Island countries who launched the campaign for the resolution.
It's amazing to see and humbling to see how this wild idea that we had, you know, 4 years ago, make its way from our classroom in the University of the South Pacific to the table or the floor of the United Nations General Assembly, and to receive such a historic UN vote. You know, they vote by consensus. So that is, I still can't believe it's happened.
The United States did not support the resolution. A senior Biden administration official told Reuters, quote, "We believe that diplomacy, not an international judicial process, is the most effective path forward," unquote. Here in the United States, the Biden administration opened bidding Wednesday on oil and gas leases covering more than 73 million acres of the central and western Gulf of Mexico, an area roughly the size of Italy. Fossil fuel companies secured access to 1.6 million of those acres. Environmental groups blasted the Interior Department's lease sale as unconscionable and another betrayal of President Biden's campaign pledge to ban all new oil drilling on federal land, they said. In France, the European Court of Human Rights heard arguments Wednesday in a landmark lawsuit brought by women retirees from Switzerland who are suing the Swiss government over its failure to tackle the climate crisis. Members of the group Senior Women for Climate Protection argue older people's rights are being violated since they're at the highest risk of the extreme heat that's becoming more frequent due to global heating. Helping to argue the case were members of the ENRI, the European Network of National Human Rights Institutions.
Few people have it in their power to change the course of history.
You do. On behalf of all national human rights institutions in Europe, ENRI urges the court to use its power to protect vulnerable individuals against escalating and irreversible climate harm. The facts are simple. Greenhouse gas emissions cause heat extremes that kill.
Mexico has launched a homicide probe into this week's fire at an immigrant jail in Ciudad Juarez near the U.S. border, which killed 39 asylum seekers. This is Mexican Security Minister Rosa Isela Rodriguez.
Al momento, se tienen identificados.
We have identified eight people allegedly responsible for the events, two federal agents, one state migration agent, and five members of the private security company are already testifying before the prosecutor's office. Part of the investigation is to confirm why civil protection protocols were not followed. It's clear that they were not respected. Also, we want to know why they did not save lives and were not able to open a gate.
The tragedy has brought renewed scrutiny to the border policies many have called inhumane enacted by the U.S. and the harsh conditions at Mexican migrant jails. The United States Senate has voted to repeal the authorizations for the 1991 Gulf War and the 2003 invasion of Iraq. Wednesday's vote was 66 to 30, with 18 Republicans voting in favor of repealing the AUMFs, or authorizations for the use of military force. This is New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez.
This vote shows that Congress is prepared to claw back our constitutional role in deciding how and when a nation goes to war, and also when it should end wars. It also protects against future administrations abusing authorizations that outlive their mandate but remain on the books.
Among Democrats who voted to repeal the Iraq War authorizations were Senators Chuck Schumer, Maria Cantwell, and Dianne Feinstein, who voted in favor of authorizing force in Iraq in 2002. President Joe Biden, who also voted in favor of the invasion as a senator, has promised to sign the repeal if it's approved by the House. Turkey's parliament is voting today on whether to ratify Finland's bid to join NATO. It's the last remaining barrier to Finland's accession to the military alliance. If the ratification is approved, as expected, NATO will add more than 800 miles to its border with Russia. This comes as 10 nations, led by Canada, are wrapping up nearly 2 weeks of NATO war games in Latvia, a former Soviet republic that joined NATO in 2004. In Russia, thousands of troops began war games in Siberia Wednesday to train on the use of Russia's Yars mobile intercontinental ballistic missile system. The nuclear drills came as the Biden administration said it had stopped sharing detailed data on its strategic nuclear forces with Russia after President Vladimir Putin suspended Russia's participation in the new START nuclear arms treaty. Meanwhile, Russia says it has detained U.S. Citizen and Wall Street Journal correspondent Evan Gershkovich, accusing him of spying. He was arrested in the city of Yekaterinburg in Russia's Ural Mountains. If convicted of espionage, Gershkovich faces up to 20 years in prison. West Virginia has banned gender-affirming health care for transgender minors, joining at least 10 other states that have enacted similar laws. The law makes an exception in cases where an adolescent is deemed to be at risk for self-harm or suicide, is diagnosed with severe gender dysphoria by two health care specialists, and has received parental consent. Meanwhile, in Kentucky, Republican lawmakers on Wednesday voted to override Democratic Governor Andy Beshear's veto of a sweeping anti-trans bill, which bans gender-affirming health care and forces people to use public restrooms that do not align with their gender. Protesters chanted from the House gallery during Wednesday's proceedings, leading to 19 arrests. In Tennessee, hundreds of people gathered at a candlelight vigil in Nashville Wednesday evening, mourning the three adults and three nine-year-old students killed by a heavily armed shooter at the Covenant School on Monday morning. First Lady Jill Biden joined the ceremony. On Capitol Hill, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said Wednesday, Republicans want to see all the facts before proposing any new gun legislation in the wake of the school shooting. That prompted a heated confrontation between New York Democratic Congressmember Jamal Bowman and Kentucky Republican Congressmember Thomas Massie just off the House floor, where Bowman accused Republicans of refusing to save children's lives.
The cowards, a 9-year-old, 3 9-year-olds, are they going to those funerals? No, they never go to the funerals. They never go to the scene of the mass shootings. And it's not just in schools.
Kentucky Republican Thomas Massie responded to Bowman, quote, saying there's never been a school shooting in a school that allows teachers to carry, unquote. In 2021, Massie tweeted a photo of himself and six family members holding assault-style rifles with the caption, "Merry Christmas. P.S. Santa, please bring ammo." In Los Angeles, seven California Highway Patrol officers and one nurse were charged Wednesday with involuntary manslaughter over the 2020 death of 38-year-old Edward Bronstein. Bronstein was detained during a traffic stop and violently pinned down at a highway patrol station in order to draw a blood sample, despite Bronstein saying multiple times he would give the sample voluntarily, screaming, "I can't breathe," 12 times. The Texas Observer announced it has reversed plans to shut down and will continue publishing after a staff-led crowdfunding campaign raised over $300,000. The Texas Observer, once edited by the legendary muckraking journalist Molly Ivins, is a bastion of progressive reporting in Texas and beyond. And in Australia, lawmakers advanced a move to hold a historic referendum that would recognize Indigenous people in the Australian Constitution and establish an Indigenous voice to Parliament committee. This is Thomas Mayo, Kaurig, Aboriginal and Kalkalgal, Torres Strait Islander, a member of the referendum working group.
It's not good enough that here in this country, the life expectancy of Indigenous peoples is almost 10 years less than other Australians. It's not good enough that proportionately we are the most incarcerated people on the planet. It's not good enough that our youth languish in detention in obscene numbers. They should be our hope for the future. It's time for us to have a voice.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Coming up, Senator Bernie Sanders grills Starbucks' longtime CEO Howard Schultz in a testy Senate hearing on the company's union busting. Stay with us.
Brainwashes. It's when you think how they want to think. Speak how they want to speak. Living in defeat when you don't want to question what they teach. As the truth with no proof. With the fear of burning in eternal heat. When you're programmed not to be your own man. But a sheep. Being herded as they worded. So you're thinking ain't free. When you sleep in a deep sleep. Standing on your feet. When you beat making ends meet. Raw they in they see. Now you're labeled obsolete. Working for elite deeds. In the heat on bare feet. Smiling showing off your teeth. Good grief. It's a circ how they work. And they jerk while they serve. That's the circus. The circus underneath the brainwashes.
By Blackalicious. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Oh, and Nermeen, a very happy birthday, belated
though
it is.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Senator Bernie Sanders faced off with a longtime CEO of Starbucks, Howard Schultz, Wednesday at a Senate hearing focused on the company's union-busting record. Schultz, who's worth over $3 billion, stepped down as Starbucks CEO March 20th. His resignation came just weeks after a National Labor Relations Board judge ruled Starbucks had engaged in, quote, egregious and widespread misconduct, unquote, in its effort to prevent workers from unionizing. The judge also ordered Starbucks to reinstate illegally fired workers, reopen closed stores, and halt other union-busting tactics. Since 2021, nearly 300 Starbucks stores have voted to unionize. Later in the show, we'll be joined by a Starbucks worker who was fired after leading a unionization drive at a Starbucks store in Augusta, Georgia. But first, we turn to excerpts from Wednesday's hearing of the Senate HELP Committee. HELP stands for Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Before questioning Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz, Bernie Sanders opened the hearing by outlining Starbucks' labor record.
Over the past 18 months, Starbucks has waged the most aggressive and illegal union-busting campaign in the modern history of our country. That union-busting campaign has been led by Howard Schultz, the multi-billionaire founder and director of Starbucks, who is with us this morning only under the threat of subpoena. Let us be clear about the nature of Starbucks' vicious anti-union efforts. The National Labor Relations Board, NLRB, has filed over 80 complaints against Starbucks for violating federal labor law. There have been over 500 unfair labor practice charges lodged against the company, and judges have found that Starbucks broke the law 130 times across six states since workers began organizing in the fall of 2021. These violations include the illegal firing of more than a dozen Starbucks workers for the crime of exercising their right to form a union and to collectively bargain for better wages, benefits, and working conditions. Since the first Starbucks union was certified more than 450 days ago in Buffalo, workers at more than 360 stores across 40 states have held union elections. 83% of these elections have resulted in a union victory, and today nearly 300 Starbucks coffee shops employing more than 7,000 workers have a union, despite Starbucks' aggressive anti-union efforts. But with nearly 300 shops voting to form a union, Starbucks has refused to sign a single first contract with the union, not a single one. Schultz, thank you very much. My time is limited, as is the time of all of our members here. So I'm going to be asking you to respond to each question as briefly as you can, hopefully with a yes or a no. Do you understand that in America, workers have a fundamental right to join a union and collectively bargain to improve wages, benefits, and working conditions? Do you understand that?
I understand, and we respect the right of every partner who wears a green apron, whether they choose to join a union or not.
Are you aware that NLRB judges have ruled that Starbucks violated federal labor law over 100 times during the past 18 months, far more than any other corporation in America?
Sir, Starbucks Coffee Company unequivocally, and let me set the tone for this very early on, has not broken the law.
Okay. Are you aware that on March 1st, 2023, an administrative law judge found Starbucks guilty of, quote, egregious and widespread misconduct, end quote, widespread coercive behavior, and showed, quote, a general disregard for the employees' fundamental rights, end quote, in a union organizing campaign that started in Buffalo, New York in 2021. Are you aware of that?
I'm aware that those are allegations
And Congress has created a process that we are following, and we're confident that those allegations will be proven false.
All right. Mr. Schultz, before answering the following questions, let me remind you that federal law at 18 U.S. Code Section 1001 prohibits knowingly and willfully making any fraudulent statement.
I understand that.
Were you ever informed of or involved in a decision to fire a worker who was part of a union organizing drive?
I was not.
Were you ever informed of or involved in a decision to discipline a worker in any way who was part of a union organizing drive?
I was not.
Have you ever threatened, coerced, or intimidated a worker for supporting a union?
I've had conversations that could have been interpreted in a different way than I intended. That's up to the person who received the information that I spoke to him about.
Were you informed of or involved in the decision to withhold benefits from Starbucks workers in unionized stores, including higher pay and faster sick time accrual?
My understanding, when we created the benefits in May, 1 month after I returned as CEO, my understanding was under the law, we did not have the unilateral right to provide those benefits to employees who were interested in joining a union.
Under your leadership, Starbucks has repeatedly refused to bargain with any of the 7,000 workers in nearly 300 stores where workers have voted to represent themselves through union. The first group of workers to win their election have been waiting more than 460 days to reach a first contract. Mr. Schultz, will you commit right now that within 14 days of this hearing, Starbucks will exchange proposals with the union, something it has refused to do for more than 450 days, so that meaningful progress can be made to bargain a first contract in good faith? Will you make that commitment?
Because the arrangement that was made by the union and the NLRB in Buffalo to negotiate one single store at a time, we have met over 85 times for a single store. We've tried to arrange over 350 separate meetings. We've said publicly, and I say it here again, that we believe that face-to-face negotiations is the way to proceed. And the reason I want to make that point is that there have been safety issues in which Starbucks managers have been outed on social media. There are privacy issues. We don't want to do it on Zoom. We are prepared to meet face-to-face on a single store issue.
Will you make a promise to this committee that you will exchange proposals with the union so that we can begin to make meaningful progress?
On a single store basis, we will continue to negotiate in good faith.
That was former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz and Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders during a hearing Wednesday on the Senate Help Committee. Again, that HELP stands for Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Former Starbucks worker Jason Saxton also testified at the hearing.
Over the past 18 months, Starbucks has waged the most aggressive.
In April, our store won our election by a landslide, 26-5, despite all of the threats and intimidation. Starbucks' retaliation and union busting ramped up even more after we won our election. We were constantly being watched, and managers listened in on our conversations through our headsets. Store hours were constantly changing, and hours kept getting cut. People were fired right on the shop floor. They fired 7 of our union members. 2 of them were shift supervisors. 2 partners requested medical and maternity leave. Management refused to sign off on their leave, and they were terminated. Several people quit, including my wife. Some of us were told that we should look for another job. In July, I led a 2-day unfair labor practice strike and delivered our demands. A month later, I was fired for supposedly being disruptive.
That was former Starbucks worker Jason Saxton testifying Wednesday before the Senate. He joins us now from Augusta, Georgia. Jason, welcome to Democracy Now! Can you talk about the significance of this hearing and the grilling of the—well, usually everyone thinks of him as the Starbucks CEO, Howard Schultz, but in fact, he just resigned.
Yeah, thank you for having me. You know, yesterday's hearing was a very interesting few hours. Howard Schultz, you know, did what he always does and, you know, misrepresented what was actually going on in stores. And maybe that's just because he doesn't know, even though he said he came back for operations and for the customers, even though he constantly says he's there for the partners.
Give us some background, your own story. What happened in July? What led to your being fired last July from the Augusta, Georgia Starbucks store where you were working?
Yeah, so at my store, we decided that we were going to unionize because we were facing a lot of staffing issues. People's hours kept getting cut. The training was insufficient. Healthcare coverage was too expensive, still is too expensive. And myself personally went on parental leave to have so my wife and I could have our daughter, and it was insufficient. It was just long enough for us to develop postpartum depression and then have to go right back to work. So we went forward with that, and we kept dealing with those issues after our election. And that is also when they started firing a lot of us. And they fired a shift supervisor, and so we decided to do a walkout, which led to a two-day strike. And after that two-day strike, I went back to work. Everything was good. Went on vacation and came back, and I was fired. And they said that I was being disruptive. Now, again, on the day of the walkout, I wasn't being disruptive. And not only that, I wasn't a partner. I wasn't working at the time. I was off the clock.
And what's your sense, Jason, from the other employees at that store, but also at Starbucks stores elsewhere? If you said, you mentioned some of them now, but what working conditions are like for Starbucks employees? What precisely are the health benefits they get? You said it's very expensive, time off, how many hours a week they work. If you could just say, you know, what are those conditions?
I mean, the conditions are insane, right? So a partner, which is what Starbucks calls their employees, can work 1 week 25 hours and the next week work 5 hours. So there's no stability in how much you're earning and how many hours you're getting. So you can't afford to pay your bills and you have to choose between gas and food. The other working conditions, like on the shop floor, would be, you know, if you're down and warming, you know, you could burn yourself consistently. And that happens a lot with a lot of the products that go in the ovens. You know, we're constantly moving rapidly and constantly understaffed and having to meet the goals that Starbucks wants us to meet, which is 45 to 60 second out the window times, you know, for drive through.
Let me ask you something, Jason. I think the number is something like 293 Starbucks stores have voted to organize of the 9,000 and seems to be going across the country. Howard Schultz was grilled about the bargaining session, something like there have been 85. But in many of those cases, is it true the Starbucks officials walk out within 15 minutes?
So I don't have any firsthand experience because Starbucks has refused to negotiate with my store. But from what I have heard from other locations is that, yes, it's been 6 minutes at one bargaining session. And it's simply because they don't like that there are people on Zoom, which I think it's funny. Howard Schultz said during the hearing that they didn't want extra people to be in the background on the Zoom calls. But, like, you're constantly listening to us and surveilling us when we're working and then using that to terminate us and write us up, you know. And then also Starbucks policy allows customers to come in and record us all day long, and we can't do anything about it.
Finally, you testified before the Senate, but as we wrap up, your final comment, not only to Starbucks workers around the country, but for people to understand Starbucks is obviously a global corporation, about what people should know about Starbucks.
I think the biggest thing that people should know about Starbucks is that while they tout themselves as a progressive company, while they tout that they're partner first, their actions, and even in Howard Schultz's words yesterday, don't show that they actually care to listen and understand. That direct relationship that Howard Schultz says he wants is just so they can continue to dictate what they want to do and not actually give the partners a chance to say what's going on in their store and what they need to be whole.
Well, Jason Saxton, I want to thank you for being with us. Former Starbucks shift manager terminated after leading the union drive at a Starbucks store in Augusta, Georgia. He testified on Wednesday before the Senate Help Committee, Health, Education, Labor and Pensions. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. When we come back, filmmaker